time for best things. My best thing is this winter's been crazy busy and I haven't had time to cook at all. But this past weekend, I set aside time, purposeful time, to make a dinner for myself. And I made the best coconut curry chicken I have ever made.
Nice.
Yum.
The trick was to not use light coconut milk. You got to use the full fat stuff. And let me tell you, it's so creamy and so good. So that was my best thing.
Do you still have leftovers?
Oh, yeah. I've been eating it all week.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's always
I did a crock pot of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like That's true smart. Scandinavian, you know, Minnesotan hearty style.
Yeah.
Did it.
Scandinavian style curry.
Crockpot.
Oh, yeah. What about you?
My best thing, I'm going to share with you a new diet tip I learned. My diet tip is get a puppy and you will lose 8 pounds in 7 days like I did just because I was not able to feed myself.
Like, why?
Because it, like, okay.
Because you're so busy?
The joke buried in there, I got a puppy.
Congratulations.
And it's like constant watching and making sure it doesn't bite things and destroy my life and what have you. And then it'll go to sleep for 10 minutes and I'll be like, what can I stuff into my mouth before I get distracted in 10 more minutes?
Okay, I have two questions.
Yes.
Is it a he or she?
It's a he.
And what's his name?
I've been calling him Bear. His adoption name was Polar Bear. And everybody but one person said, you're changing that, right? Immediately after telling them the name.
Yeah,
so,
that was
kind of
my thought.
Yeah, see?
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't know.
But Bear's
cute. Yeah, it's a good dog name. So my diet has been like Skittles and leftover tacos and coffee.
That's
and
healthy.
Oh my.
Like peanut butter for a week. And it's been great. It's just been great. So
Nikkei doesn't approve.
I'm
Sorry,
worried
Nikkei.
About you.
I mean, not everyone can eat curry all the time.
Yeah,
Tess.
I'll bring you some.
You've heard her voice. Now meet the person. Our guest this week is Nikkei Kadri. She's a local actress who is performing in the Guthrie Theater's production of A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be talking a lot about it. But most importantly, right now, what is your best thing?
I've been thinking about this, and I'm so excited to share. After opening our show, we finally had a bit of extra time in the afternoons, and I had time to make 2 giant mugs of tea in one day.
Ooh.
This is an accomplishment. This is true bliss.
What kind of tea do you go for?
I go for herbal tea only. Okay. But this time I made vanilla tea and it was so delicious.
Nice.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of calming tea. That's nice.
To just sit and read a book and enjoy the sunlight coming in through the window and write a little bit. That was true bliss.
You've been
week.
Busy.
Yeah, I have been very busy with the show. But it's good busy because that's what I love to do.
That really does sound like a best thing.
Yeah.
Performing. Or the tea.
The tea. But also the performing. Yeah.
It all sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we will learn all about the show that you're in and your life and your career and hopefully a few other things as well. I'm Tess Weinberg.
I'm Alex Goderud. Our guest is Nikkei Kadri, and this show is called Pop Till We Drop.
We've been calling you a local actress, but are you from here?
I'm not from here.
Where are you from?
I was born in Texas, raised in Georgia.
Awesome.
And I went to an arts high school in Georgia. And from there, I auditioned for the UofM/Guthrie Theater BFA actor training program.
Oh, sure.
Awesome.
And that's how I ended up here in the Twin Cities. But before that, I'd never thought about living anywhere cold.
Yeah.
But sure it was definitely worth it.
Good. So how long have you been here for then?
4 years. Nice. Well, a little over 4 years. I graduated in May of 2014.
Very cool.
Is it starting to feel like home for you?
It is. I call it home when I'm talking to my parents.
Sure.
And saying I'm going home. And they're like, you're coming to Georgia? No, guys. No. I'll be here.
So when you first moved here, what was your first involvement in the local theater scene? Was it through getting out through classes? Were you finding small theaters to be involved in? How... Sort of walk us through how you got to being on stage at the Guthrie.
At the Guthrie. Well, sure. We started with classes at the Guthrie, and then we had what are called Guthrie Mondays, mm-hmm. where we speak with local artists and artists from around the country who are performing at the Guthrie. And that's just a great experience to get to know what it's like to be a professional actor. And then after we study abroad in London in our junior year, I came back and I did a commissioned show at Mixed Blood Theater.
Okay.
Which was about parents with disabilities and with disabled children and working with that. And then I did a show at Park Square Theater after that. And this was all through Twin Cities Unified Auditions.
Okay.
I got that. Cool. So that was a great opportunity. Audition for those. And that was Mary T and Lizzie K at Park Square Theater. And I worked with a great artist, Shay Cage, who also mentored me in my show that I wrote and composed and choreographed and directed senior year as my honors thesis.
Sure. Wow.
So meeting artists through the program was, I'd say, the first start of getting here to the Guthrie, and then working with other theaters in St. Paul and Minneapolis and getting to know more artists who then support my work has been a blessing and part of my journey.
Yeah. And you mentioned composition in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
You also perform music or?
I don't perform it.
Okay.
That was my senior honors thesis, and it was just something I really wanted to talk about, the artistry of being a Black performer, a Black female performer,
mm-hmm.
and what that means to us today, for the younger generation especially. And I wanted to tell that story in as many ways as possible. And
okay.
So I told it, decided to tell it with music as well as
sure.
writing.
Even though that was not your area of training, you just sort of bit it off.
No, I write songs for myself just for
sure.
fun. I write poetry and sometimes it turns into song.
But nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, thanks.
So what is that story that you mentioned to be a Black female young performer?
Yep, that was called The Missing Piece. And it was just about the complications and the struggles of being a minority performer in mm-hmm. any capacity. And I guess how much harder one has to work to have their work see the light of day.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are just so few of us out there to approve the work. And I just wanted to give voice to that story.
So can you tell us a little bit more about what specifically those challenges and obstacles are that you face as a Black female performer in a theater community that is maybe not as diverse as it should be? What sorts of problems were you trying to address?
I guess it would start with not having as much work out there.
Okay.
For artists of color, because we've started behind
mm-hmm.
naturally in our the system and the creation of our country. And with that, it's hard when there's just less work. And with that, I guess it comes to auditioning for everything, one, and letting everyone see our faces, knowing that we can be
mm-hmm.
playing any sorts of roles that are out there, even if they've never been played by a person of color before, that we can break new boundaries just by showing our faces. And then I'm a huge advocate for writing and creating our own work and having our own venues and our own support systems for people to come and see our work, to see mm-hmm. that we are avid creators and artists and that we're out there and we're looking to work. And I think that's just so important. It is difficult because of the limitations of work is usually created for the majority.
Mm-hmm.
And in this state, the majority is not the minority.
Yeah.
And that's okay. But it makes it difficult for artists of color to be constantly working all the time. So I'd say that's probably the biggest struggle and biggest concern in any city is, will there be enough work when there's not enough
mm-hmm.
written work.
Do you feel like it's improving at all? Do you feel like it's getting worse? Like, is there any transformation within this situation?
Yeah, right that now? I've seen. I think it is improving. I've seen more of an awareness.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen more artists speaking out here on NPR and many other places, articles. I've just been reading more about it
mm-hmm.
and seeing it popping up more. So the discussion is happening. And once we start talking, then people start listening.
Yeah, that's sure. the first step.
Yeah.
And so you came to Minneapolis knowing that you were heading toward an acting career.
Absolutely.
How did you, as a child or as a teenager, get started in the acting world?
I got started in my living room. I had no idea what I was doing, but I would write skits based on holidays. And
okay.
I would cast my brothers
Yeah. Were they willing participants?
No.
were they little brothers?
This is my older brother and my younger brother. I'm in the middle. My younger brother was in many of the productions in the living room afterward. Yeah. Yeah. My older brother, in the very first adaptation of The Princess and the Pea, in which I played the princess, of course, I cast my older brother as the dragon. And he, the day of our performance, stomped on the set. So he was no longer hired.
Yeah. Sure. Really taking that dragon role to the
yeah,
extreme.
He really did.
Yeah, good for him. Yeah, just channeling his inner dragon. That's
absolutely
great. Yeah.
So it started from there, and my parents just encouraged it. I made skits about Santa Claus and elves stealing chocolate, and we made costumes out of construction paper and cardboard. It was just me having a ball, and I didn't realize at that time that that is what I'd end up wanting to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Are there other creatives or actors in your family, like that, if that creative energy was encouraged, does that come from somewhere?
No, not that I know of. Not at all. Everyone I know of in my family is science or math or lawyers, doctors.
Yeah. That's great.
Just me so far, but I've been really lucky to have a family that's so supportive of it from day one.
Mm-hmm. And so that eventually led into like high school drama, or what was the progression?
Yeah, absolutely. It was from them noticing that's what I wanted to do to taking theater classes in middle school and then moving from Texas to Georgia, to where I was like, I have to do this as much as possible. And we found, luckily enough, an arts high school, Pebblebrook High School. And that is where I kind of focused my energies and learned about the auditioning process and Shakespeare. The first time I did Shakespeare was there. The first play I ever did was in high school. So I'm so lucky to have
that. What was your first Shakespeare play?
There? Was As You Like It.
Oh, okay. Nice.
I played Jaques. Had to do the famous All the World is a Stage speech. Not daunting at all.
No, it's not. For a young actress, of course.
Yeah. Not.
So do you have an affinity towards Shakespeare,
the
then?
The text, absolutely. Yeah. Just reading it, studying it in a literary sense has always been something that has excited me. But performing it and having the words in your mouth and chewing them like good food and sharing them with an audience is just something I live for, that I get so excited about. And so the fact that I get to perform 8 shows a week or more, Midsummer Night's Dream, is just awesome because the text
have
is so fun.
A favorite Shakespeare play?
That's a good question. I don't know if I do have a favorite Shakespeare play. I think the more of them that I reread and the more of them that I perform, they change the order of which I love, but I don't think I have a favorite.
Do you have a dream Shakespeare role?
There's one I think I would like to do again. I would like to do Lady Macbeth again.
Oh my gosh, I was just thinking if Alex asked me that question, I would totally pick Lady Macbeth.
Really?
She's badass.
She is.
And then you just said that. So you've played Lady Macbeth before?
We played it at Shakespeare's Globe in London.
What?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
But we split it up, so there were 7 Macbeths and there were 5 Lady Macbeths.
Nice.
Okay. So I didn't get to play the full role, and that's why I would love to revisit that play again. In the full context.
That's so cool.
And you just, for fun, casually at home, you'll just reread them and dive into the text more?
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes we'll get friends together and read just plays and pick parts just to have the text in my mouth. Richard III, I would also love to do, to play Lady Anne.
Mm.
So there's so many more. Twelfth Night, Viola. I could go on and on. Yeah. We'll be here forever.
Yeah. So let's talk about your current Shakespeare production,
absolutely,
Midsummer Night's Dream. Have you played that show before?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No.
What has the, I mean, you've mentioned your grueling rehearsal schedule and now your grueling show schedule. What is it like inside of a Guthrie production, like from knowing that you're going to be cast to opening night? What do you go through?
Oh, there's so much. First, the screams of joy
that
you got a job, because nothing is guaranteed in this industry.
Sure.
And what role were you given in the play?
Yes, I'm playing First Fairy.
Very cool.
Which is so exciting. I get to sing a lot in this show, and I love to sing. And so it's a joy to get to do that. But the first thing that you do, or that I do starting in the process, is diving deep into the play once again, because you do that for the audition process. But now that you know what role you're playing, you get to dive into it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure you know what you're saying. The language is so old, but relatable. And so you want to make sure that you're on top of making it relatable sure. to your audiences, to our modern audiences. And then from that, it's the awesome rehearsal process where you just get to play and meet your cast members. It's always interesting the first week because you don't know most of your cast members. They're from different states or different places. Mm. And to get to create an ensemble where you're playing lovers and with someone you've never met is just, those moments are some of the most exciting sure. because you're really discovering what the play is with those new people right at that moment.
And do you discover things about yourself as well? I'm sure it must just be such an explorative process in general.
But. Yeah, I guess since I'm singing more than I'm talking in this show, I guess I've discovered new ways of moving my voice, which is really fun. I am a classically trained singer.
You have an incredible voice. I saw the show on Wednesday and I was so blown away. I was like, damn, that girl can sing. Oh my gosh.
Thank you very much.
It was beautiful.
Thank you. But I don't get to sing too often kind of the pop and R&B styles. I sing more classical opera or musical theater. Mm-hmm. And so it was really fun to get to explore that kind of poppy new age sound that mm-hmm. is Broadway, new Broadway right now. Mm-hmm. So that's been really fun.
Nice. Shakespeare revivals happen around the clock mm-hmm. on every stage in the world. At some point, there's a Shakespeare revival going on. What makes this production of A Midsummer Night's Dream different?
It's fantastical. The costumes, the lighting, the projections, the music, the choreography is all new, dynamic. It's just this cast that makes it completely different. The choreography is very strong, and the fairies in this work are something different from what I think someone would expect when they see fairies. They might think really light and fluffy, mm-hmm. but these are strong and earthy and grounded fairies who aren't afraid mm-hmm. to fight for their king and queen. And I think that's awesome. The costumes, too, have a great edge to them, and they're elegant, and there's so much glitter. So it just spans the spectrum of what one would imagine when you think of A Midsummer Night's Dream. And I think it even goes beyond what one would imagine. Mm-hmm. And that makes it exciting for our audiences.
Nice.
There is so much glitter in the show.
There is so much.
Because you are like head to toe in glitter. And yes. I wanted to, how long does it take you to get your glitter on? And then does it ever come off?
It takes a good, maybe 5 to 10 minutes to be fully glittered. There's a lot of spraying and sealing involved. So that's why it takes forever to come off. It mm-hmm. is in my hair.
Oh, yeah.
It's in
yeah.
my clothes, all over my apartment. And the same thing for our lovely wardrobe team that yeah. are putting glitter on us every single night. It's everywhere.
Like, it's fairy dust.
Yeah, it
it's
is.
Your fairy mm-hmm. dust.
So I think it's gonna be a few months before it fully leaves.
Before it's gone.
Everyone's clothes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So A Midsummer Night's Dream, in my opinion, was it when I was younger, before I really got into Shakespeare, was a really fun text to read because it kind of has all the different fun elements. There's like the fantastical fairies, but then there's like a play within a play.
Yep.
But a lot of people, when you hear Shakespeare, you kind of turn away if you have, if you've never discovered it before, have never had, you know, influential English professor sit you down and make you read it. So what would you say to, you know, those people who maybe shy away from Shakespeare at
Absolutely.
First?
Absolutely. I would say that Shakespeare wrote his plays to be seen. So I think a lot of people who do study them in school get caught up in the reading of it, which is just one stage of Shakespeare's process. But in the end, you have to see it, and mm-hmm. then you really hear the words. So I would say to anyone who is feeling a little bashful about coming to see the Shakespeare show, I would say, come and see it. Mm-hmm. And then let your imagination run wild.
Yeah.
Because it's just so different, especially with this music that is so now. Mm-hmm. It's not what one would expect when you come to see the songs and hear the songs of Shakespeare. It's very modern, and I think it's so approachable for anyone who hasn't heard the text before. And we work so hard as actors in rehearsal process to make sure that our audiences can understand it, that before we move on to any other stage of the scene, it's to make sure that our director knows we know what we're saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so once we know that, I think anyone can understand it.
Yeah.
And for the outsider, it would be mm-hmm. so much different from, like, you know, a staging of Julius Caesar or something, one of the
sure.
more serious, you know.
Yeah, it's a comedy, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we always call it, like, it's Midsummer the Musical because it's just so full of light and fun. And it takes you on this amazing journey between three worlds, Athens, the play within a play, and the forest, and the mechanicals. So Yeah, it's awesome.
Very nice. So when you step out onto stage, are you at that point hopefully in autopilot mode, or are you really creating each time you step out onto the stage?
Yeah, creating every time, because the audience is different every time, and I feed off of their energy, and I can tell if it's a Sunday morning and they're a little tired, or if it's a Friday night and they're ready to party, you know, and you take that energy and you play with it to kind of create the world together. The audience is definitely another character that Shakespeare considers when he's writing.
And especially in this play, they turn the theater into a theater of the round.
Yeah.
So it seems like the audience, especially in this one, had even a bigger part to do with the whole experience.
Absolutely.
Which was so fun.
Yeah, on stage seating makes it just a world closer than any experience that I've had performing with Shakespeare. And it's great to have them so close.
Yeah.
It really is.
When I was there on Wednesday night, Puck, who plays the lead male fairy, he's climbing all over the theater, but at one point he had to climb up into the rafters, and he popped up next to a woman and she screamed. and it was that was part of the play. It was part of the experience because the audience was so involved in it. And it was shocking for everyone. I imagine very shocking for the woman.
That's what I love the most as an audience member. I love to be taken into the world, and I don't want to feel at any moment that I'm not a part of this story.
Yeah.
And I think we're doing that. I think we're doing that well.
Absolutely.
So I'm really proud of this production.
Nice.
Sometimes when I see live productions, and I think this maybe happens a lot with Shakespeare just because it is just another world. You know, it's not in the same time that we're familiar with. And I think sometimes you're asked to believe a lot or kind of give into it. And I don't feel that it's totally believable without asking to be believable. You're just in it right away. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. It's always good to remember that Shakespeare wrote for his contemporaries. And so it's important for us to think about our contemporaries as we're performing his work. It shouldn't stay stagnant. It should evolve just as time does.
Yeah.
Do you ever get the extremely Minnesotan audience who does not want to be brought into the production? And how do you deal with that, if so?
So far, we haven't, crossing my fingers, run into that so far.
Yeah.
And if they are a little bit quiet at the start, I think it's because they're listening to the text and really trying to get the story. And once they get into it, they're just having a ball.
So far,
we've been lucky.
what's next on your calendar?
After the show, I am moving to New York City.
What?
Really?
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
That's so exciting.
I'm very excited to do that.
What's the other than the many sort of seemingly obvious reasons, what are the big reasons?
I want to try a different market. There are just different kinds of opportunities that New York has that no other city has, and I want to be there where those opportunities are and see where that takes me.
And I imagine in your travels you've picked up friends and family who live in
Absolutely.
New York.
Absolutely. And in our cast right now, we have quite a few from New York City.
Nice.
So they've been walking me around through virtual maps of New York City to make sure I know where I'm going and what to do.
What a lovely support space to have.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
I have been lucky about that.
Do you have an apartment picked out already?
But we have some specific neighborhoods. I'm moving with my best friend, too.
Okay.
So she's doing the main searching for me while I'm here doing the show.
Sure.
So,
very nice.
I just have one more question about the show. I was a little bit shocked and excited about the costuming. They were risque for what the Guthrie normally puts on. I was
Absolutely.
Like, those are some bold choice in costumes. When I say bold, I mean scant a
revealing.
Little bit. They were a little bit revealing.
Absolutely. Yeah,
how did you and the rest of the actors feel about that when they were introduced to you?
I think at first people were a little worried about having so much of their skin revealed. But then when we all thought about the kind of story that we're telling about being in a warm tropical forest and bringing in our bitterly cold audience members as they're walking outside to coming into this warm environment, I think it just helps to tell the story and warm them as well.
Yeah.
With the atmosphere.
Absolutely.
So if anyone wants to find out more, you can go to my website.
Where can people find you in the world? What's your website?
www.nikekadri.com.
And how do you spell that?
N-I-K-E-K-A-D-R-I.
Beautiful.
Awesome. Perfect. you're currently performing in a really high watermark of human creativity and artistic output that is a Shakespeare play. Let's take it down a couple notches and talk about TV.
Okay.
Yeah.
Since winter is, of course, the time to sit on the couch and stare at the television, do you have any aspirations as a television actress?
I definitely do. And in New York City, there's a lot of opportunities to audition for that.
Yeah.
Lots of Law and Order.
I was going to say, like, what do you watch and who would you want to emulate?
Oh my gosh. There are two shows that I'm in love with, and I love shows led by strong, powerful women. So yeah. They're both shows led by strong, powerful women. And one is The Good Wife, led by Julia Margulies. And I just think the writing is amazing. And season after season, it just gets better and better and better. And that is a show that I could keep watching day after day if I had the time. And then Scandal, which I've just caught up on.
Really?
Next season.
Yeah.
Yep, I love me some Kerry Washington. And I would also second again that the writing and the acting is just fantastic. And that's what draws me to a show, honestly, is if the acting's good and the writing is good and it gets better and better.
Yeah. Do you feel like you have higher standards for what you expect from television as a result of being in, like, well-rounded, 3-hour dramatic productions? If it's, like, 22 minutes of garbage, are you just, like, forget it?
Huh. I don't watch reality TV.
Okay.
So I think that's where my standards would stop. But I do love Food Network, which is as close to reality TV, I guess, as it can get. Chopped.
I love Chopped.
Is one of my favorite shows of all time.
I can watch like 8 episodes of it in a row. It's crazy.
It just changes every time.
I know. It's so exciting. New ingredients,
and
new people.
And they're good chefs.
They're so good. It's so creative.
Who's the host of that one?
Oh,
I haven't seen it. Is it Alton Brown or?
No, it's not Alton Brown because he's doing a different show.
I don't know. I'll have to look it up. I mean, I hear people talk about
that guy.
But
yeah,
you know, that guy.
That guy. Yeah, with the glasses.
That guy. He wears a suit and glasses.
Oh,
but then, like,
okay.
the panel changes every time. Too.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
The judges are great. Yeah. I love that show.
Yeah.
What about singing reality TV, like American Idol, The Voice, that kind of thing?
I have not.
I've never seen.
I think I've seen
them.
Portions of an episode sometimes with my family, but never actually seeking out.
I love The Voice. I think it's great. Yeah, because it's supposedly blind audition. Mm-hmm. So because you know American Idol, they're so mean to the people coming in, and The Voice seems to be truly about the talent. I know that's all like produced, obviously, but
do you think America needs a democratically elected pop star? I don't think that
I don't think that the point of the show. I'm not drawn to the final result. I just like seeing people do what they are really passionate about doing. You know, it's like a bunch of people, and they always have stories, which I know are also produced. But it makes me happy seeing people who have had different journeys, but seem to still be persistent about pursuing the thing that makes them truly happy.
Yeah.
I'm such a sucker for that. I like cry during all of
it. Oh, no. You know, I've had some friends that have actually gone on there who've been trying and trying and trying forever to make it as singers and just haven't had the visibility.
Yeah.
So for that, I guess I can understand.
Why yeah, a little like marketing boost.
It is a little, yeah.
Do you find yourself like fantasizing about being on the show?
No.
Dreaming.
Mean, you have to have a really good voice to be on. You have to like sing in tune all the time, which for me, it's like, it's about half.
So.
There's always shower singing. That's for everyone.
Yeah. I for sure need my band to round out my sound. Where these people, I mean, just have like epic voices.
Yeah, they can just belt.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. So.
What about you, Alex?
What am I watching right now? I'm on an HBO kick. I'm catching up with Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Nice.
I don't know.
Have you seen the new Girls episodes at all?
I have, yeah. And I've actually been enjoying them.
I know.
I liked the change of scenery.
Mm-hmm.
We won't spoil too much.
Ooh,
but
yeah,
there's
I don't even know. I haven't gotten that far.
There's a change of scenery in season 4, and it is much appreciated.
Yes.
What else have I been watching? Silicon Valley on HBO. Mm.
I've heard that is so good.
I laughed more than I thought I was going. I laughed a lot. I wasn't expecting to. I don't know. I feel like I sometimes have like a decreased funny bone when I'm watching TV. I just want to like binge watch and get through things. And, but it actually like took me aback with how clever and sort of the moment it is. Mm-hmm. It kind of like every sitcom is focusing on some gimmick or another. You know, it's like. all the friends who live together, or like they all work in a coffee shop, or, you know, whatever the conceit is. So I thought that it was just going to be, you know, geeky men programming a thing, and it was just going to be sort of formulaic, but it actually was pretty, you know, pretty interesting and captures the zeitgeist of tech pretty well. I don't know.
That's when I can tell I'm really into a good comedy, is when I'm laughing out loud, mm-hmm. and I know that it's a good thing.
Have you guys seen Broad City?
No.
I have not.
Okay. I am not joking around here. It is the funniest show I have ever.
Ooh.
I will sit there like shaking, laughing, like rolling over. I mean, just like hysterical laughing. It is the funniest show. It is so Broad inappropriate. City. Like the most inappropriate show ever, but it's like Workaholics but with two women living in New York City.
Okay.
And just how they get, it's perfect
soon
for you
to be my life.
Yes,
good.
This will soon be your life. But they're two best friends and they're so funny, and they started off as comics, like I think stand-up comics,
okay,
or in the comedy world, and comedy writers, and then they both kind of play themselves in this show, which
That's
I
awesome.
Love when people in like have they play themselves, a version mm-hmm. of themselves, like how Louis C.K. is Louis in his mm-hmm. show Louis. Like mm-hmm. I love that because it kind of lets you in onto their life, but you're still removed enough, which mm-hmm. is so fun.
I have to say, I know it's an evil corporation, but I'm just going to give a shout out to Amazon right here for giving me a Blu-ray copy of Planet Earth, the BBC version, for like $15.
Yeah.
And it is mind-blowing.
Yeah, that's some good winter chill time right there. That's what that is.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, travel the world. I love nature programs. That's like my favorite,
the wonders of
favorite
the world.
Genre.
I like the underwater stuff, the underwater ones.
Blue Planet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh.
That's the whole separate series, or like the couple episodes of Planet Earth?
The couple episodes of Planet Earth that I've seen that are underwater.
Yeah.
Okay, I just read on the internet that there's like, they found these like underwater snails like in the depths of the ocean, and their teeth are the hardest like natural surface or natural mineral or something in the whole world. Like these snails' teeth.
Hmm.
Isn't that like that they know of yet?
Sure.
Isn't that crazy?
That is so strange.
The Earth continues
to
produce surprises.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
We never know enough.
You know, I bet Planet Earth will soon cover that.
Yeah, I hope so. God, if they brought that back, I'd be so stoked.
Yeah, they should.
Will.
If Amazon Blu-ray sales are high enough, the demand will be clearly
demonstrated. You just need to buy more, Alex. Did you know how that's
just stockpile
works,
copies.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So have you ever auditioned or been in the role of like a commercial on TV or anything like that?
Yes, I have been on a commercial. I haven't done a TV show, though, yet.
What was the commercial?
You're going to ask. I was trying to skip over it. It was for Dorsey Schools. It was really fun. I think it's a school in Michigan.
Okay.
A kind of community college.
Were you were a student?
I played a doctor's assistant.
Oh,
did
you?
Did you have lines?
I did not. I just smiled a lot.
Nice.
Perfect.
And fixed a child's boo-boo. I kept saying while we were filming, my boo-boo. Just keep smiling at the camera.
What was that? What was it like to be in a commercial? How did that work come about?
Yeah, through my agent here, which is awesome. It was really fun. Everyone has such good energy. It's a short amount of time to get a lot of work done. So to be happy about it makes the process go a lot easier. So it was a great experience.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you said you have not been on TV yet. What would your dream role be? Maybe kind of show, maybe show that already exists. Yeah. Like, who would you want to be?
I do love a good, nasty drama where just mess happens and you keep seeing the main characters just struggling to get by in whatever capacity that is. I really love House of Cards.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I love politically based dramas.
Sure.
So I think something along the lines of that.
Would you be really like the if you were in House of Cards, would you be like a schemer, or would you
I'd
be
love
like
to be a schemer.
Okay.
But I feel like they want to put me as the happy one.
Aww.
We'll see. We'll see.
Do you feel like you'd have to change your approach to the role at all? Just going from doing, you know, like Shakespeare dramatic stuff to more television produced?
It's definitely a smaller scale because there's just the camera versus an audience of 1,200.
Sure.
So to bring it down, bring down the scale is definitely a challenge, but I love getting to work on it. And when the writing is still just as great, then you have just as great of a chance to be telling a story in a big way, just as Shakespeare.
So do you get nervous? I mean, when you picture yourself doing television and there's like maybe the cast and it's smaller, obviously, mm-hmm. does that seem more nerve-wracking to you, or does like a 1,200-person audience seem more nerve-wracking to you? Or is it all just like, you're like, I got this?
Never. I'm always feeling nervous because I want to do really well every time. I guess I would say theater is more nerve-wracking, even though when you're on TV or film, it's captured forever. You only have that one moment, that one evening, or daytime show in theater to tell the story to that audience who may never come to see that show again. Mm-hmm. So I think as far as wanting to do well and tell the story well for that audience, you only get that chance. That's more nerve-wracking for me.
If that's ever, when that is starting to get to your head, like you're starting to get worried about it, what do you do to get your confidence back? Like, what is your diffusing method?
Breathing. Yeah. Breathing and just trusting in the work that we've done, the rehearsal process, and in that I'm not alone in telling the story. I have a wonderful cast to tell it with, too.
Nice. That's a good way to do it.
Yeah, I think so. We're never alone.
when I was in the Glass Menagerie in ninth grade, I almost threw up before and I mean, there were like, you know, six performances or something, but it was like hard 14-year-old stage fright.
They say that going out on stage requires the same amount of adrenaline and produces the same amount of fear as jumping out of an airplane.
I believe it. It felt very similar.
Yeah. I was in Footloose when I was in eighth grade,
yes,
I think. And that was terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying. But I still remember like the dances. So it's weird how that stuff gets like ingrained in your mind. Do you find yourself like having old lines pop into your head and out of other plays?
Woo! Most times they go.
We're good with that.
As the new show comes into mind.
I imagine you have to make space up there.
I think so.
Yeah.
But definitely choreography sticks with me for a good while.
Yeah, it makes, you know, it's kind of muscle memory.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Sticks around.
And the songs stay with me forever, I think.
You should do singing more. You should do that all the time. It was so fun. And I mean, it seems like the whole cast was like full of really talented vocalists.
Absolutely. It was part of the
crazy
audition process.
Six-part harmonies going on. Like, it was amazing. Yeah. But yeah, it was very, very impressive from an audience perspective.
Thank you so much.
Nicely done.
Well, Nike, thank you so much for coming on the program here.
Thank you.
It has been a real treat to have a real artist instead of like a, you know, struggling part-time artist, by which I mean Tess and myself.
What's up?
Woo!
Hey!
There's a high five. Well, best of luck in the rest of the dates for A Midsummer Night's Dream.
What is the rest of the runtime?
We run until March 29th.
Okay.
Can we say best of luck, or should we say break a leg?
You can say both. I take them both.
Okay. Okay. Good to know. And best of luck with your coming move to New York City.
Yeah. Congratulations again. That's great.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. And this has been Pop Till We Drop.